G-11, Ford McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. From inside the small box handed to him by Chip, Clark McCarthy produced a curious electronic device that didn't look all that different from the scientific calculators both men remembered wrestling with during the better-forgotten calculus classes they endured in high school. When Clark looked at the front of the device, having initially seen the back, the calculator's similarity began to fade. There were no buttons, only a large screen more akin to that of a squarer-than-normal smartphone. As Clark studied the bizarre device, Chip looked inside the box and saw a sheet of printed instructions. "For the McCarthys," he read aloud, "any thumbprint will initiate the device. All three will be needed to access the card. Enter the date DDMMYY, relevant to the prompt. Oldest first. 24-hour lockout for a wrong answer. Directions to backup card emailed 6 months after device activation, if all attempts unsuccessful. Enter card in basement, together, usual code for access. Take what you want." "What?" everyone else said at once. Chip handed the instructions around first to Henry. Mr. Bird and the out-of-place but somewhat surprisingly amiable ICA Chairman William Godfrey both gazed at it over his shoulder. Without really having expected to see anything different, they were all nevertheless slightly surprised to see that Chip had indeed read the words verbatim.
"Well, we might as well give it a shot," Clark said.
"I don't get it," Godfrey readily admitted. Chip didn't have to say the same for everyone to know he was thinking it too, but Mr. Bird's focused expression suggested that he could discern the full meaning.
"He wanted to make sure you all see his stash at the same time," he said. "Whatever is in there, that's what he wanted."
"What, so no one can find it and keep it for themselves?" Henry asked. "When it's just us three, he wouldn't think we'd keep it from each other."
"I don't know either," Clark interjected. "But maybe this is just to reduce the chance of anyone else gaining access. Someone could have one of our thumbprints or forcefully interrogate one of us. Three is much safer. Who knows what went through his head, but probably something like that."
Godfrey didn't say anything, but he was a little surprised that none of the others seemed at all shocked or disturbed that Phil Norris had evidently not only had the McCarthy men's thumbprints on record, but had gone so far as to set up a complex security access system which made full use of them.
"What's going to be in that stash of his anyway?" Henry mused, thinking out loud.
"Billion-dollar question," Mr. Bird chimed in.
"At least he wants us to see it, though. Well, wants you to see it. It's better than a self-destruct feature linked to his heartbeat. What do they call that? Dead something?"
"Dead man's switch," Clark stated. "But Mr. Bird, he's just gone straight down the line with our thumbprints here, maybe because we're all related. He won't have been meaning to cut you out or anything like that."
Mr. Bird forced a smile that made it look like he appreciated Clark's words while still, quite naturally, feeling a little left out.
"Yeah," Chip chimed in. "Mr. Bird, when we run through his full will, you're gonna see that the last thing Phil has done is cut you out. Trust me."
"I just can't think of why it would be anything at all useful to us," Henry continued, still wondering about the stash's contents, and now talking mainly to himself. "I mean, if it's something important to us, he wouldn't have kept it hidden away, you know?"
Still holding the device, Clark wiggled it in the air.
"One way to find out."
"Yeah, when Dan gets back," Henry said.
"There's no sense in starting now. You saw what it said about a wrong answer causing a 24-hour lockout. Maybe there's a countdown time limit to provide each thumbprint, and missing it counts as wrong. Dan could be back in 5 minutes for all we know, so why throw away 24 hours just like that?"
Clark had no immediate response to what was a fair point, but a large part of him still wanted to initiate the device just to see what kind of prompts Phil had chosen for each of the McCarthy men to answer. Before anyone could speculate further on the contents of Phil Norris's near-mythical prepper stash, the sound of Emma's office door opening ripped their attention from the device. All of the men turned immediately in search of a hint in her expression as to the nature of what she'd learned from Leisha about Phil's killer and his motives. With her best poker face in play, she gave nothing away.
This would have been a lot easier if Leisha could have made one of those alien transcripts and let us all see everything in 10 seconds, she said, forcing out a joke without a smile or a laugh as she handed what was essentially a decidedly more mundane, text-based transcription of Leisha's thoughts. But here we are.
How bad is this? Godfrey asked, staring into Emma's eyes and clearly hesitant to see what was on the page for fear that it would be information of a greatly destabilizing nature. There were certain names he really didn't want to see linked to Phil's death, and he had a feeling Emma knew which ones they were.
It's all there, Emma said, maintaining the plainest expression she could. Everyone, please just read it and don't say anything until everyone else is finished.
Godfrey exhaled deeply and looked down at the page, scanning as quickly as his eyes could go while still taking in the words. Emma looked back at Leisha, who was standing in the doorway, having openly relayed every detail in his mind. Utilizing this form of telepathic uplift power, which Emma was thinking of as deep diving, for lack of a better term, exhausted Leisha like no other. He had openly mentioned this, stating that while performing several flash-based teleportations in rapid succession could bring a general feeling of mental and physical tiredness, that came nowhere near the fatigue he was still experiencing after his deep dive on the intruders. Emma had thanked him again when he mentioned this in the moments before he shared everything, but couldn't help but ask how careful he and Sacco had been to protect their discovery of such incredibly powerful patches. This was true telepathy of the kind people had always feared, she considered. Priceless in the right hands and contexts, like at Chip's house a matter of minutes earlier, but a terrifying power to consider in the wrong hands. Leisha assured her that due to his and Sacco's shared concerns about former members of the squadron gaining access to a power they would doubtless seek to weaponize, as was their instinct, they had taken every precaution. He stated that he trusted her and Clark completely to act with similar care, saying this in a manner that left nothing between the lines in suggesting it should remain a Tier 1 secret. This new hexagonal patch and the doors it could open were almost overwhelming for Emma's mind in the few seconds she had so far devoted to truly thinking about it all, but the information the patch had garnered was dominating her attention for now. It took a lot of effort for her to keep a straight face when she handed over the information to others, a face intended to allow them to read the bombshell information without any prejudicial feelings about what they should make of it. But Leisha never seemed to have any problem in that regard. Usually, at least. But while the others made their way through Emma's printed notes at varying reading speeds, she saw an unmissable change in the alien's expression.
It's Sacco, he said, sending the thought only to Emma. I think he wants to talk.